Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams
and Elizabeth Wallace, and you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 440. And tonight, we do not have a Night Vale episode to recap because they are always on hiatus in January, but we have some other things to talk about instead.
So we did actually manage to watch another episode of the fourth season of Beastars.
Catherine meant the third season.
And a lot was going on in this one. And I also learned something when I was reading recap about the first episode of the season.
Oh,
and that was about, at least according to one of the recaps that I read, one of the rabbits that Haru was having lunch with was the Harlequin rabbit that was bullying her in the first season. And if that's the case, I guess power to Haru that, you know, she acknowledges that this person has matured a bit and is no longer nasty, but I don't know. I mean, we were lucky enough to not get a whole lot of bullying when we were growing up, but I think if I had had somebody who had put hands on me in, you know, college, high school, whatever, I don't know that I'd be that forgiving.
No, threw her bed out the window, too. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know,
No.
But Haru is a nice person, so
yes. Also, in this episode, we learned that the little sheep, Seven, that is Legoshi's next-door neighbor, she doesn't have an ounce of self-preservation in her, does she?
Nope, she really, really doesn't. That's where we pick up the episode is, you know, Legoshi's got her all flat on the ground. There's a really harrowing sequence when she's trying to, like, grab her phone and hit, like, the SOS button to call for help and everything. But he does manage to get himself under control. But even when he does, she still doesn't run.
Nope. She decides to help him out. And it's because he remembered her name, Seven. And she tells him, I'm not used to carnivores calling me by name. And that's where the next scene that we see her, she's at the place where she works, which is, I think, a sports apparel company. And she meets a couple of her coworkers who are carnivores, and they're really kind of intimidating, and they're definitely very condescending, and they call her lamb chop, which would be irritating even in the best situations, but it's a couple of carnivores calling her food.
Yeah.
So that's got to be, I mean, she's smiling, she's putting up with it. And the Legoshi comes up, and he's been shopping for some shoes. And all of a sudden, the other carnivores are like, suddenly they're very deferential to Seven. They apologize for not calling her by her regular name. They, you know, really weren't trying to be intimidating, and they leave. And she is pissed off.
Yeah, she has been putting up with this bullying for so long. And Legoshi comes in and says one thing. He corrected them on her name and everything. One thing. And they immediately shut up. And she's like, it's so easy for you. And she's furious.
Yep. I love this recap on, it's an anime rant. Is the website. And the quote is, the sheep girl spent years just trying to grin and bear it. Then an arrogant teenager came to her workplace and instantly took away her problems by just existing nearby. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that really does sum it up. Because it's effortless. He doesn't even realize that that would be a problem for her. He comments about the fact he had no idea how hard it must have been for her just being in a world where carnivores exist.
Yeah. He catches up with her when she's having a drink by herself in a park, and not really in a depressing way. She does seem to be enjoying herself. But he's apologizing, and she basically tells him that he doesn't have anything to apologize for and stop talking already.
Yeah.
Hands him a bottle of soda or something, I don't know. And I gotta tell you, the animation on her face, this is another example of no shortcuts being taken. Just little gestures when she talks, when she looks around at everything. They were doing a really good job with her this episode.
And we also, this episode, got to see Juno again. And it was in a flashback where Rui was... he was reminiscing about graduation, and I think he had come to the school, to the college, and he confronted a couple of lions, one of whom had been drinking that, I guess it was Kynes, the new soda that apparently has pieces of herbivores in it, which makes carnivores kind of out of control. And Rui just kind of effortlessly knocks one of them to the ground, just basing on what he learned from the Shishigumi. Mm-hmm. But he's thinking about how he can't get away from carnivores and flashes back to talking with Juno, and Juno thinks that he's become, like, made himself vulnerable to her by showing her his prosthetic leg, and he's trying to say no, it's not that at all. And then she kisses him, and he absolutely rejects her and walks away, but it does kind of look like he was sort of into it. But I'm just thinking, poor Juno just cannot catch a break.
No, she really can't. He really hurt her feelings this time, and he's saying, you know, he's trying so hard to get away from carnivores, and they're still clinging to him. So I mean, he might have enjoyed the kiss, might have not, but he's more irritated than anything else.
And as far as the Shishigumi, they're being roped into distributing, or at least, you know, being the shipping people for this Kynes drug by their new boss, who we still haven't seen yet. And they, whoever it is, like, convinces them to come along because they were impressed by him getting a chunk of ivory to the the people who manufacture drug. So he drops down an entire elephant head, tusks attached. And I didn't see that very clearly when I was watching it, but that is damn intimidating and kind of hard to miss if an elephant goes missing.
Yeah, seriously. So then in the episode, that's when we have where Lugosi goes to talk to Seven and apologizes and whatever. That's fine. We flash from there to a bunch of rats. You've got these two carnivores and they're in the back of a van with a whole bunch of money. And this figure shambles up to them. And it's actually like a giant figure made out of rats. And they all split apart and they steal the money. And they're saying something like, oh, yeah, it's our job to steal from the wicked. And we're really good at it. And they fall down this chute that they're going through. But there's someone holding a bag underneath it, catches all of them in the bag, and then slams the bag against the wall. Like, it's really brutal.
Yeah, yeah. It's an interrogation scene where the leader of these rats is off on a table tied down, and all of his compatriots are in a bag being beaten against a wall. And then in comes the Beastar. And it is a horse. And yes, they did a great job of him. He's very elegant looking and lanky and really badass. And he's obviously there to stop, you know, try to prevent crime, but also to make sure that the police know that it doesn't matter if the rats are so small, they still deserve the same consideration as the larger animals would get, yep. Which I was glad because I was just like, oh my God, those rats are not going to survive this.
No, my God. I was actually surprised any of them were still alive after that. I mean, he really smacked that bag against the wall, but the horse does
see smears of blood on the wall.
I know. And the horse does open it up, and at least some of them are still alive. It was very quick, but so then it goes, the horse is talking to that one rat, and they're actually trading information about this soda that's been going around, and they're realizing that the Shishigumi are distributing it, that the dealers probably don't know that it is actually very dangerous. As near as I can tell, it's even more dangerous for carnivores who have actually had real meat before. I think anybody else, it could have bad side effects, but if you're a carnivore who's had real meat, like Lugosi, it could be very, 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 very dangerous.
Yes, because we do see one of the Shishigumi absolutely losing his shit and trying to beat the tar out of all the other Shishigumi because he's been drinking this soda.
So we flash from there to Lugosi. He's been working in an udon noodle shop, and he does confirm that he drops out. He keeps telling people, so I don't think he was like kicked out. It sounds like he dropped out. And he's been earning money there, so I guess he's got his first paycheck, and he's totally doing the, oh, yay, I have money, and I'll be able to pay my bills, and I'd like to get flowers for Haru, and you know what? I really think I'm okay. And I was like, God, wait for it. Here we go.
And that's when we see those two pushers who come up with a can of this kind stuff and tell him that he needs to try this because he looks like a big, strong carnivore that would really enjoy it, and they open it up, and you see the fumes start getting and, you know, doing that thing where it activates his meat lust, whatever you want to call it. And that's where the episode ends.
Yep. It was that abrupt. I mean, I thought we were going to get at least a little something, but I'm like, oh, that's the credits. Oh, okay. So there we go.
Anyway, so yeah, I mean, the animation is beautiful, and I do like how they did the Beastar on this. I mean, he always had a very elegant design in the manga, but just being able to see him move around is wonderful.
Yeah. Now, are they going to do a different intro for every episode? Because I really liked the intro this time. It was kind of like done almost like paper cuts and like a music video. And it was, it was interesting and not what we had last week. So I'm wondering if they're doing it different.
I'm wondering. I mean, yeah, that would be very cool, especially, I mean, it's the final season. Why the heck not?
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so real quick, I want to jump into the fact that I did finish watching Tenet. And I will say, I do think they did a good ending, even though I still don't understand a lot of it. I have the basic idea of what was going on and the basic idea of what people's motivations were, two things made it difficult. One, it is really complicated. I mean, it's just the logistics are insanely complicated. But two, there were several times when I had a real hard time understanding what people were saying. And if it wasn't for the fact that I was catching up on like the last 45 minutes of it, I might have actually stopped it, turned the subtitles on and done that. But I was like, ugh, I already don't understand most things. I'm just going to power through. But when I do rewatch it, which I eventually will, I'm going to turn the subtitles on. There's like this whole thing going on with one particular character's motivation. And I'm just like, I really am not sure what's happening here, but it is freaking fascinating. And this idea that he's come up with, and I would say that if you plan on watching it, one thing that I can tell you, and no character says this, and I forget which author was the one who said this at one point, we are all time travelers. All of us are time traveling. We just do it, you know, at a very slow speed and only go forward. And if you remember that, that's what the kind of time traveling we do. We don't jump around. We don't go quickly. We just go in one direction. If you keep that in mind, some of the logistics may make a little more sense, because it took me a while to understand what was happening.
Okay, I wish they would fix the whole thing with not being able to understand people, because more and more people are complaining about it. And apparently there's a lot of people that work on sound on movie productions that have been like raising the alarm about this fact that there are things that you need to do to make people easy to understand in a movie, and they're not doing it. But nothing's ever really quite gotten as bad as the Eggers movie, The Witch. I don't know if you ever saw that with Anya Taylor-Joy. In between everybody's voices being pitched not quite to the point where you can hear them and everybody using this incomprehensible, like, colonial era accent, it is really hard to hear what the hell anyone's saying. And it's frustrating because it's a good movie, but you're just like, we should not be having to turn on the subtitles in order to understand our movies.
No, we really shouldn't. I'll see if I can remember to post a link to that article we found one point. I remember posting in our social medias, and it did really well, but somebody went in detail over all those things that people should be doing and are not doing to make the sound good. But it was a fascinating read.
But for something that I am able to understand, I watched episodes 4 and 5 of Star Trek Lower Decks Season 2. And oh my God, this show is just so damn fun. I mean, the storyline in episode 4 was that Ensign Tendi is like having to track down all the people who haven't gotten their medical scans done. And it turns out one of them was the doctor, the alley cat doctor, who freaks out and runs for it. And he's acting like a cat the entire time. Like, seriously, when Tendi looks underneath a shuttlecraft and the doctor's there and she and then slashes out at her, I'm like, it's so cat. It's so cat while still being an anthropomorphic cat alien. It's just fun.
So hilarious. Now, simultaneously with that storyline, you've got Rutherford and Boimler have heard this story that Mariner is apparently like a spy, an assassin that's been placed there by, you know, the Starfleet, whatever. And they're scared of her the entire episode. But as it turns out, she was the one who started that rumor because she wanted people to leave her alone. But she never thought that her friends would believe it. So it's just a big misunderstanding, but it's very cute because they are terrified of her.
They're terrified of her. And she starts to get her feelings very badly hurt that they believed that she would be, you know, like, and they, I think it was Rutherford said, well, that was the part that made sense, that you wouldn't actually be our friends because nobody as cool as you would be friends with nerds like us. And I'm like, aw. And then it just turns it all around to being heartwarming again. So that was
so sweet. It was very sweet.
But she wasn't really helping her case when the episode started out with the fact that Rutherford and Boimler had been practicing their hand-to-hand combat at night so they could beat up Ensign Mariner this time instead of her beating them up. And they do manage to like smack her in the face and she gets a bloody nose and like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And she's like, no, this is great. Now I can get a real workout. And then you just see her like slinging them from wall to wall.
It's so intense. Oh my God. Now, the next episode was fun because two storylines, of course, going on. One is Boimler and Mariner really want to get into this big party that's happening. And they're thinking that Boimler can pretend to be his clone who is actually stationed on Riker's ship, and that's way more likely to actually get into the party.
Right. And also, the Cerritos is having to escort this one ambassador who is a Duplo, who apparently when he gets upset, he duplicates himself. And they have been like walking so carefully and like trying not to upset him for so long. And then they accidentally upset him. And before long, the entire ship is just filled with the Duplos. They're just like, oh my God, you don't actually like me. And just nothing they say helps until they get mad at him and piss him off. And that makes him combine, because what he really needs is a little bit of confidence. So that was lots of fantastic images on that. But God, the bits with Boimler and Mariner, because they get into a car chase on a space station, and it's beautiful. I mean, the colors and the neon and like the computer-generated assisted animation going on for some of that is great, and Boimler is just screaming like a little girl the entire time. And for some reason, and I would have loved to have been in the room when the writers came up with this little bit, but as they're crashing through various bits in this space station that's filled with people, Boimler is just shouting out whatever it is that they're crashing through the entire time. So he's going, casino, barbershop, fine men's clothing, Vulcan, Vulcan, Vulcan.
It's wonderful.
It's so fun. Yes. So that was just, I mean, this show, it gives the fans what they want, but it still manages to surprise you the entire time.
Yes. It's like it's fan service, but with completely new storylines all the time. And I love the fact that, of course, Mariner couldn't get into the party, even though they believed Boimler that he was the clone and everything, but she wasn't highly enough placed to get in. And at first he went into the party without her, but then he ended up leaving the party because it was only going to be fun if she was there to make fun of people. And so he left and found her at the bar that she had gone to drown her sorrows.
And then the bartender happens to let them know that they're not the only people that have gotten kicked out of that party, and that most of them end up coming to this bar, especially a couple of really famous people several decades ago. And you check and you see scratched on the bar, it's Spock and Kirk. And
yay!
Like, and now suddenly it's all turned around. This is the coolest place in the entire universe. And not the big party with all of the highly placed generals and whatever.
Yes, because the Cerritos thought that they would actually be able to get into the party for, I forget what the captain's reason was, but they completely can't get into the party either. So Mariner gets to actually be the cool person to be like, oh, well, if you don't want to go to that party, you can come to our party. So it's just so fun.
And I did like the little mini storyline between Ensign Tendi and Rutherford, which is that they're putting together a model of a space station. And Rutherford is getting so frustrated because before he lost his memories, that was what he and Tendi had been working on. And he can't interpret any of the notes that his previous version left for himself in there until Tendi had to explain they weren't supposed to be finishing this model, because working on the model meant that they could sit in the bar and work on it and people wouldn't bother them because they were busy. So
yes,
the whole plan was to just never finish it. So the last thing they do is she gives him a new model kit, and it's of the Deep Space Nine, and
yes,
she says, let's never finish this.
Oh, it's so cute. Those models are intense. At one point, the way they use it is they have to get through this little like hatch that's completely locked closed. They ejected the warp core out of their little Enterprise model and used it to blow up the hatch. So I'm like, oh dear, wow. I'm not kidding around.
So yeah, looking forward to the rest of the episodes in this season, because it's just, I haven't seen a bad one yet. I haven't even seen a middling grade one. They're all fun.
They're all fun. All of them are. Okay, last thing I want to mention, with everything that we're supposed to be watching, like I have not watched any Arcane. I just barely managed to watch the Beastars episode right before we were recording. So what have I been watching instead? Ugh, I've been rewatching BoJack Horseman.
Oh, of course you have.
Yes. I actually called up the episode where BoJack and Sarah Lynn go on that epic bender. I don't know. I had just been thinking about it. And since I have my Netflix account, I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch that episode. And I'm about almost a season later after that. I just kept it on. I say it's great for having on in the background, but the number of times I stop what I'm doing just so I can watch it, I mean, it's just really good.
It's just amazing that they came up with a character. I mean, he lives in LA, in Hollywood, in a place where most people would probably assassinate their own mother to get a spot on a famous TV show or any TV show. And yet BoJack manages to be his own worst enemy and also everybody else's worst enemy, because awful things happen to people around BoJack because he just, that's just how he moves through life. And yet somehow you still like the character and kind of wish that he would get his act together. So it's just, it's so complicated writing and just, and funny and tragic and dark and
dark. Oh my exciting. God. Yeah, there's some really funny episodes and there's some very deep, like meaningful and like sweet episodes. But for the most part, man, it can get really depressing sometimes. So don't go into it thinking it's just like your average happy-go-lucky cartoon. It can get dark.
Well, I mean, also they want to poke the bear, I think, in a lot of these episodes, like that whole bit with the really vapid pop star Serafina, who's a dolphin, I think.
Somehow
people on her social media, because of a mix-up, thought that she was getting an abortion when she wasn't even pregnant. But she was going with it because everybody was talking about how brave she was for talking about an important life experience and sharing with everybody. So she does a music video about, you know, let's kill that fetus. It's just like, oh my God, people's head would explode. You have got to be able to just roll with it if you watch this show, because that's the kind of things that they will do.
Yeah, I don't think they go to like South Park levels of trying to make sure that they offend absolutely everybody, but they are not scared of offending you. What the point is.
Yes.
But I guess that'll wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. Hugh just put up a review. Wallace and Gromit, the latest movie, has hit Netflix.
Ooh, and what did he think?
It's gave it an A+, and a lot of other people have been talking about how it's good as well. So it's not just Hugh, who is our most forgiving movie reviewer we have ever had. People seem to like it, so that's another one for the list. Oh my God, so much content!
Yeah, I was listening to the Flix Watcher podcast, and I think it was the Final Destination series they were talking about, which I'm finding out a lot of people really like that series for the fact that they just like, they make it fun and funny sometimes while still being really dark and with people like getting killed all over the place. That's kind of the point. But they mentioned another podcast from one of their guests called Going Rogue, which talks about problematic films, like ones that turned out badly or had a real problematic production, that sort of thing. And I just started scrolling through it and I saw the Coppola movie, Megalopolis, that she was talking about there. So I started listening to it. Oh my God, you guys, it is just, I mean, the main character can stop time. And that's not even the weirdest part of this production. It is like Coppola's vanity project, I think. And he had all these ideas and nobody could like apparently put a leash on him or anything. And it's just mind-bogglingly crazy. I mentioned something to our friend David about that, and I don't know if any of you guys watch Red Letter Media or know about the director Neil Bream, but it was kind of like a Neil Bream movie with a budget. And he said that. I was like, holy crap, that ensures I will never watch this. So,
yeah. I don't know. Maybe he will watch it. Like I said, most forgiving movie reviewer. I would love to see what he has to say about it, because he will give some movies an F if he hates it. But I don't think he usually goes into a movie just to hate watch it. So I don't know.
I don't know.
I happened to notice that we were playing the Actorlay game, and one of the actors who's in the movie actually showed up the other day, and I saw Megalopolis. And I mean, it's got like, what is it? Got like a 4-point something rating on IMDb?
Something.
It's bad.
It's really, like, bad. Really bad. Yeah.
But all that and more, pixelatedgeek.com. So no Night Vale again next week, but we have got to watch the last three episodes of Arcane.
At the very least, we need to watch one of the last three episodes. We've gone for quite a while without watching any. I mean, we can't put this off forever.
No, we can't. We have our work cut out for us. So one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later. Hang on a second. I'm going to get to this bit here.
Note to self, I am going to go in and put in a little correction there. It's not the fourth season of Beastars. It's the third season of Beastars.
Oh, crap. Why did I think it was the fourth one?
I'll do a little thing for there. That's fine.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Correction. All right. Anyway, continue, please. But two things. Sorry. Siren.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody drink. 1 minute. On my... Damn it.
Another siren.
Probably the same siren. Where are you? I guess they're coming from the hospital? Man, they turn this shit on right at the very end of the street, all the way down. It's not necessary, dude. There's no one here. Wow, hang on. I'll try and back that up a little bit so I have a clean edit. But still, I can still hear it.